Welcome to Klima, the Insights and Thought Leadership podcast brought to you by IGS. We are a Scottish-based technology company specialising in delivering platforms that create ideal climates for plants and people. Over the course of this series, we hope to share conversations with both old friends and new from across the world who share our passion for continuous innovation and a refusal to accept conventional technical thinking. Today, I'm really pleased to be joined by David Swales, Head of Strategic Insight at the UK's Agriculture and Horticulture Development Board, or AHDB. Welcome to Klima, David.
Thank you, Kate.
It's great to have you here. David, it would be great for our listeners if you're able to share a bit of background to the AHDB and its focus within the UK.
Yeah, no, happy to do that. So AHDB, we are a levy board based in the UK, and we're funded by farmers and growers in the UK. We're really here to help farmers and growers be more competitive and sustainable in the future. So we do a range of different functions. We undertake sort of technical research. We do things like knowledge transfer activities. We do some market development work, both globally and domestically. And we also do a lot of market intelligence analysis to sort of understand what's happening in the marketplace, which is an area of the business which I work in.
Excellent. Thanks for that, David. So today we are going to be considering a number of different areas relating to growing and food production. But I'd like to kick off by asking, in your opinion, whether you think that food security is high enough on the agenda in the UK at both a government and a consumer level?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I guess my take on that is it probably hasn't been on the agenda at all for quite a few years, but it probably has snuck back on in recent times, which is obviously a positive development. So we have a new agricultural bill going through Parliament at the minute in the UK. So that's going through the House of Lords, and that does actually reference food security, which is quite nice. So I think politically it has been recognised, and I suspect COVID-19 might be partly to thank for that. We haven't got many things to thank COVID for, but certainly some of the challenges the government experienced getting hold of PPE here, and they maybe have historically relied on sort of global supply chains to do that type of procurement. And maybe the government now has realised that sort of local shorter supply chains have some benefits and that they can't take food security for granted. So I think it has sort of snuck back onto their agenda, albeit in quite a small way. So I think in the agricultural bill, the requirements are quite modest around food security. It just talks about government having to report on the state of food security every 5 years. There's no real sort of duty to do anything or to act on that. And I think it's probably on the agenda for some consumers now as well for the first time in a long time. So consumers in the UK have, in recent years, the sort of big topics of concern have been around things like health and also the environmental impact of food production. Those sorts of issues have been very high on their agendas. And what we've seen since the COVID outbreak is some of those concerns have dropped back in sort of consumers' psyche. And actual more sort of practicalities, such as food availability, getting hold of the food types they want, has come back onto their agenda. So it's kind of been a time of quite rapid change there, really.
And these consumer perceptions have been changing, as you say, for a number of years. Do you think there are consumer priorities that will become sort of more manifest as we, emerge from COVID and move into the Brexit era? Any that you think will become absolutely sort of the key priorities for consumers?
Yeah, I think this is a big challenge for farmers and growers. Farmers and growers are right at the start of the supply chain, and sometimes they're quite a distance away from their end consumer. So at AHDB, that's one of the key roles we play, really, is to look at consumer trends, what's going on there, what's happening in the market, and hopefully communicate some of that food to our farmers and growers. So those consumer trends, definitely, they're always evolving and they're always changing. But I think over the last few months, we've probably seen them shift more rapidly than they've ever done before. Looking at the sort of key issues now, We have a very, very gloomy economic outlook in the UK. And what we're seeing, that is sort of starting to flow through and affect consumers. And I suspect that will ramp up over the next few months. So we're seeing much more price conscious shopping going on. Mm-hmm. We're also seeing lots of new cooking habits emerging. So, I mean, there's been a huge surge in meals being cooked at home. We've had the eating out market closed for a number of months in the UK. It's only recently started to open again. So people have kind of almost been forced to prepare meals at home. And they've probably had a bit more time on their hands because we're seeing much more scratch cooking going on. So those are some of the really big changes. And then as I hinted before, some of their sort of priorities and issues seem to be shifting as well. So sort of health type issues seem to have taken a bit of a back seat as a sort of driver for the food people buy and consume. And also some of these concerns consumers had pre-COVID around sort of the environmental impact of agriculture and sort of environmental concerns seem to have dropped back. But I expect that might be a bit more short-term lived. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of change going on. And I suspect some of these things might gradually evolve back to the sort of new normal, but some things are going to take much longer. So, I mean, certainly the food service sector, I suspect that's going to be quite a slow recovery there. So, I mean, there's still going to be a lot of scratch cooking. So people will be looking for sort of meal inspiration when they're in the shops. They'll be hopefully continuing to scratch cook a bit more. And that provides quite a few opportunities for the food sector.
Interesting. Yeah. It's a fairly fluid consumer perceptions, are a fairly fluid element. But I would agree. I've certainly been doing more scratch cooking rather than sort of hastily trying to prepare something. So it's definitely in my own household a change we've noticed. You talked there about environmental concerns and environmental sort of management from an agriculture and horticulture market. And there definitely appears to be a over the years, and presumably continuing, a growing emphasis on environmental management and sustainability of growing systems. How do you think this will drive a sort of an approach to agriculture and horticulture in the future?
Well, at AHDB, we think that will be absolutely key. So we're in the process now of developing a new five-year strategy for the organisation. And the environment, I think, will play a much bigger part in what we do as an organisation over this next five-year period. So, I think politically there is an increasing push in this area. So, we've got the 25-year government plan. We've got various sort of government commitments in the UK to get to net zero. But also, for me, there's quite often win-wins in this area. So, if farmers and growers can make sort of efficiency savings, that they can help reduce the environmental impact of production, benefit the environment, but also benefit the bottom line. So, it does, I think, sometimes happen as a bit of a win-win. And also, as well as government, we do notice this big growth in concern around the environment by consumers. So one of the things we do at HDB is track consumer attitudes on a quarterly basis and kind of ask consumers about issues, things they're concerned about, and what's sort of top of their mind. And generally, we've been doing this for quite a few years now. Generally, consumers' attitudes don't really change that much. There may be a sort of front page story on the Daily Mail one week at the same time we do our tracking survey, and you see like a little bit of a blip up in attitude.
Okay. Yeah.
But what normally happens is things just return to normal when we do the survey the next time. So any changes tend to be quite short-lived. But over the last sort of 3 or 4 years, we've seen a gradual build of that sort of environmental concern. So consumers saying that they are worried about the environment, they're concerned about the impact food production has on the environment. And sometimes their concerns are the bits of the supply chain they can see. So, a really good example of that is concern about plastic packaging. John. We've seen that absolutely shoot up with the Blue Planet documentary. That's really, really become a big issue for consumers. And obviously, over the last 6 months, it's kind of that environmental concern has dropped back because people have been much more concerned about food availability. But I suspect, John, I mean, that might be a short-term blip down before we return to that sort of trend again.
Yeah, no, very interesting. And yeah, the Blue Planet series just has had a phenomenal impact. It's really interesting.
It really has. And I think for me, it kind of shows that consumers are interested in certain bits and certain issues. And John, when we actually drill into that and ask more detailed questions, John, when it comes to plastic, for example, consumers are very concerned about plastic packaging in retail. But the use of plastic on farm doesn't really factor in their psyche at all. So there's certainly things which farmers and growers can think about there in terms of how they produce and how they kind of sell their product to consumers. So thinking about what's important to consumers and how do I meet their needs.
Absolutely. One of the things in a previous podcast that we discussed was looking at actually the packaging element of purchasing, and that producers have, clearly outlined on labels and packaging the sustainability elements, from sort of the farm to the plate, essentially, and how that is gaining in awareness and affecting purchasing decisions as well. So I think that's a really interesting point. David, I'm keen to ask a bit more about Brexit and the impact, because this is obviously an area you will be considering quite extensively, I would think. In a post-Brexit era, can the UK horticultural market become more competitive, do you think? And what could potentially hinder this? I'd also be interested to know.
Yeah, so Brexit is really the sort of the big issue. And obviously, I guess Brexit really politically has happened now. So we have left the EU. But I guess at the minute, we're still sort of sheltered from much of the effects of Brexit because we're in this 12-month transition period. But that transition finishes at the start of January, so there's not long to go now on Brexit. And particularly farmers, growers, people in the supply chain who are involved in importing and exporting of goods and produce, there's lots of issues which they need to be aware of and need to take steps to prepare for. So on our website ahdb.org.uk, there's a section on there which just focus on exiting the EU and what people need to do to prepare for that. But yeah, I think you're right, it's going to potentially be quite a big change, and there's going to be change whether or not we get a deal with the EU. And the big change will be on our trading arrangements with the rest of the world. So dependent on whether or not we get that trade deal, there will be differing effects on our industry. But yeah, come what may, we do expect there to be a sort of increased trade friction, we call it, with the rest of the world. As part of the EU, we have relatively friction-free trade with the rest of the EU. Goods can come and go. There's free movement is what they talk about. Mm-hmm. Now, that obviously will change with Brexit, and there will have to be sort of more customs checks and more bureaucracy at the border, whether or not we get a trade deal. And that trade friction will create some opportunities, no doubt about it. It creates some challenges, particularly if you're an exporting business, you're going to have to deal with some of that friction, and it might add a bit of cost to your export. But the benefit from a UK production perspective is that potentially that friction at the border may increase the sort of cost and the hassle factor associated with bringing in produce and food from overseas. So that may create a few opportunities for domestic producers to become a little bit more competitive maybe than they were before. These are all sorts of things which we try to look at and model and understand what some of the impacts will be. So John, we've produced a few sort of impact assessment studies looking at some of this. And yeah, it's something we're continuing to look at, and we will certainly be putting out information over the coming months as we get nearer to the point of exit. But yeah, trade certainly is a big changing variable, and particularly if you are importing or exporting as a business, there's things which you kind of need to be doing to prepare. So John, please do take those steps to get ready.
Okay, and I mean, I think one of the other areas that's been pretty well documented, and I'm interested to know your thoughts, labor constraints during COVID. Absolutely, it's been sort of paramount in this from an ongoing perspective. There will be labor constraints in horticultural markets across the UK and Europe, it would seem. What solutions do you consider viable and necessary to address this labour shortage?
Just to agree with you, Kate, absolutely. Labour is without doubt the big sort of negative risk factor, I think, at work here. So, John, when it comes to trade, potentially, because we're a big net importer, particularly of horticultural products, any sort of trade friction will help raise the cost, and that will provide sort of an opportunity, John, and potentially increase income for producers. The downside of some of the Brexit situation is we do expect labour costs will rise. So the government is taking a slightly more restrictive approach. So there won't be free movement of labour. And as a result, some of the modelling work we've done has shown that those labour costs will rise and kind of more than wipe out in many cases that the benefits growers may have from an increasing return. So for me, that shows that when it comes to Brexit, leaving the EU, understanding and taking steps to manage and address labour costs are really key. Obviously, keeping hold of labour you've got at the minute is now's a really important time, because potentially going forward, recruiting new labour will get more expensive. But yeah, there may well be things growers can do, such as investing in labour-saving technologies. But yeah, I guess we appreciate that now is a difficult time to be making big investments, because there's quite a bit of uncertainty still in the system. But yeah, certainly thinking about those things will be key. One of the things we're starting to push a little bit at HDB is encouraging growers and farmers to make a really efficient use of their labour. So we're in the middle of running some digital training on what's called Lean. So that's all about sort of effective processes and streamlining processes and making labour use as efficient as it can be. We're running that digitally, obviously. At the minute, we can't do that many sort of face-to-face events because of the situation. But we're getting really good take up for those events, because I think it's such a critical issue for the horticulture sector at the moment.
I mean, that's really interesting. I'm interested to know.
Well, that's certainly one of the possible solutions, isn't it? So, Joey, for me, agriculture and horticulture has always been at the forefront when it comes to automation. Joey, we're a very capital intensive industry. Probably the parts of the sector as a whole, which maybe is more labour based, are those areas where perhaps it's really difficult to automate. So soft fruit production, for example, where the subtleties of the human hand are quite hard to replicate and automate in a picking process. But the technology is always moving forward, isn't it? And I know, as an organisation, we've been invested in sort of robotics and automation and some of that sort of early developmental stuff before it gets to the sort of commercial stage. And I think it will be a really important area for the industry going forward, because sourcing labour in the way we have done, it feels to me that it's going to get harder and harder to do that going forward. Obviously, there's trade bodies out there, there's lobby organisations who are kind of working to ensure that there's a sort of future seasonal workers type scheme. It's pretty clear that in the short term, at least, to maintain a competitive and a productive industry, we kind of need some sort of solution there in the short term. But I tend to focus a little bit more on what might happen in the medium to long term. And for me, relying on a lower cost labour source doesn't seem like a good strategy. We need to be thinking, how do we get to a position where we can perhaps rely a bit less on labour than we have done in the past?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's another area as well, and particularly sort of in the COVID era, for want of a better expression, there is a greater need to ensure more consistent sanitary and phytosanitary measures are in place. How is this being addressed in the sectors currently, and what part do you think technology has to play in addressing this?
Well, that's a tricky one. I guess the kind of eyes of the country are on all sorts of different industries at the minute, and when there are slight outbreaks, I mean, you often hear that they're associated with particular employers or plants and things like that, and potentially that could be quite damaging to the reputation of the industry. So, I mean, I'm sure growers are taking all sensible precautions and ensuring social distancing, ensuring appropriate PPE. I guess, I mean, lots of the sectors obviously outdoors, so we do have some maybe advantages over maybe manufacturing type industries where everyone's indoors. But yeah, I guess now's the time where everyone has to be really careful. And if there are technology solutions to that, brilliant. But yeah, if there aren't, it's I guess making sure everyone's following the appropriate steps.
Okay. One of the things that you talked about, you've talked about a couple of times, is improved efficiency across the horticultural and agricultural markets, and as we move into away from the EU, there will, as I understand it, be less direct payments and subsidies potentially going to farmers and growers, and certainly in the way that they have been more recently. In terms of trying to drive these new efficiencies, do you think there are new technologies that will emerge, or are there new approaches that you're observing that could potentially help to improve some of these efficiencies?
Yeah, I think for me we're kind of a key point now. We know that direct payments are going to be phased out, at least in England. There's slightly different approaches being taken in Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland. But if I focus on England for now, there's a sort of 7-year transition period where direct payments are going to be phased down to zero, and policy will shift much more towards sort of an environmental goods type schemes. Now, I mean, we know that reliance on subsidies varies enormously across the agriculture and horticulture sector. So, many horticultural producers may receive very little by ways of subsidy or no subsidy at all for certain types of production. So I guess for me that the starting point for businesses is to understand how important those subsidies are for them and what their business might look like without subsidies in them. And for some businesses, that will no doubt be a big challenge, particularly if I look at the livestock sectors. In many cases, in many years, the average producer in a sort of lowland or upland livestock farm would be loss-making if it weren't for the direct payments that business receives. So that's a huge challenge in terms of how that business adapts to a new future. And part of our role as an organisation is to support and help farmers to make those changes and become more efficient. But I guess for me, it's not a one-size-fits-all. So different farmers and growers will have very different business models and they'll have different options in terms of how they adapt and move forward. So some might diversify, others might move into different crops or different types of production. But for me, efficiency is probably a key part of this, and I suspect it will be a part of it for most businesses. So some of the work we did at AHDB around Brexit, we kind of looked at different types of Brexit scenario and what they might mean. And across all of the sectors we analysed, we found a common finding. And that's if you take the sort of top 25%, the most efficient producers in each sector, whatever sector you looked at, those farmers and growers were able to remain very productive and profitable, whatever the scenario was which we threw at them. So I think that the key learning from that for me is, I mean, farmers need to kind of understand where they sit in terms of their performance at the minute. And if they aren't in that top 25% bracket, they need to be taking some steps to hopefully improve their performance going forward. And there's, I mean, lots of people out there who are trying to help farmers and growers with that. And I mean, an example, some of the things we're doing at AHDB is we have a series of strategy centres in horticulture. We've got 12 of those now across the country. And these are kind of real businesses demonstration type centres where growers can go along and see these different approaches being taken. So some of that might be technology related. Do you know what I mean? Different technologies being applied at a unit. Others might be more nuanced changes, people trying different crops, different approaches. And for me, one of the sort of key characteristics we see in this top 25% group is a willingness to sort of try new things, to innovate, to be open to change. And I guess that's a key characteristic which we will need to see over the next few years if the industry is to prosper.
Absolutely. I think that is a fundamental element is this desire to innovate and capacity to innovate. And certainly within IGS, it's something that we see so frequently within the sort of growing sectors is the vision to actually be able to do it and to diversify, to ensure this surety of supply chain and production in the future. There are definitely challenges. It sounds like there are challenges, but a lot of optimism as well, I think, from what you're saying. And it's an exciting time, but also a challenging time, would be my observations from talking with you.
Yeah, hopefully. And Joanne, definitely, we've probably majored a little bit on the challenges today, but that Joanne, there are also really big opportunities in this new era. The country's looking to strike trade deals with countries around the world. And when we look globally, there are really quick growing markets around the world where UK produce and the sort of quality and the sorts of approaches we have will potentially be able to meet customers' needs for people elsewhere. So, there are big growth opportunities. I guess that the challenge is we've got quite a few short-term challenges, not least this January deadline around EU exit, which everyone needs to be aware of. If we can get through those challenges effectively, then, yeah, a whole range of opportunities open up.
Excellent. Well, David, I'm very grateful to you for your time and all your insights across a multitude of different topics. Thank you very much indeed. And hopefully we will speak again in the near future. That's great. Thank you very much indeed, David.
Thank you for listening to CLIMA, the Insights and Thought Leadership podcast from IGS. If you would like to receive email notifications when we add new content to CLIMA, please go to www.igsclima.io to sign up. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do like or share, and to find out more information about IGS, go to www.intelligentgrowthsolutions.com.